play. The ball is tipped, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star. In all the years, no one knows just how hard you worked. But now it shows.
RJ Hunter for three. God! Rod Hunter has fallen off his stool.
BJ Anya sends him to the round of 32. What's up? What's up? What's good with it, everybody? We back again for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. And if you just heard our intro, then you know what time it is, man. It's the best time of the year. Madness, it's here, it's finally here. Sam, what's good?
What's good, baby? Overall number one.
You know it. That's definitely something for us to be bragging about. But let's dive right on into this March Madness, to this tournament, to this bracketology. What's your take of this overall field as far as the teams are concerned? Is there anything that you see that you think that they did wrong, or do you think that they got it right for the most part? What's your take on the bracket as a whole?
About 5 minutes ago, I took my first look at the brackets. I was watching a movie, so I didn't get to watch them as they were unveiled or whatever. Mm-hmm. But my first take so far is, man, it's a lot of intriguing games on opening week of the bracket, of the tournament. Like, we get right to it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, to me, the thing that stood out the most is that I feel like they gave Michigan State a bit of a bad rap, seeing as they are the number one, two seed overall. They're the highest rated two seed, and they decided to send them with the highest rated one seed, to me, which didn't really make much sense. But apparently that's on ESPN and CBS with the bracketology stuff. Everybody was speaking out mostly about that, and that definitely stood out to me as well. I don't think that was fair. I don't think that they did that right in regards to Michigan State. But yeah, man, it's definitely some intriguing matchups in the first week, and I'm glad you brought that up, because to me, the one that jumps off the page that I know I'm not missing, I'm tuned in, is Marquette Murray State.
Bro, me too. Bro.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
That's going to be a special one.
It is. For those who don't know, those are two of the most prolific scorers in the nation facing off of Marcus Howard and Ja Morant. And, man, I'm juiced. I can't wait. I really can't wait for that. But, yeah, man, I felt like they did a pretty good job outside of that overall. So, not really much to ask as far as who you got winning it, because we know. We got the Blue Devils winning. But is there any team that you see that has a chance to win it that a lot of people may not have winning it?
Let's see. Let me look at this. Nah.
No?
Nah.
Nobody at all?
Not no surprises. I mean,
okay, well, outside of Duke, who's the team that you can really see running the table?
Shit, I can see Carolina winning it. I can see Kentucky going on the run. Not Tennessee, not Virginia. I think maybe that might be it for real. I think it might gotta be one of them three teams.
Yeah, I have Kentucky going on a run as well. Kentucky is definitely my team that I'm picking to go all the way. And I actually have a rematch. I got a Duke and Kentucky championship rematch. So I think it'll be a completely different game from the first time that these two saw each other. But that's who I got in my finals. But outside of, I guess, the favorites, I can see a team like in my upset bracket, I actually have Nevada running the table. And in my upset bracket, Nevada's running the table. And the reason being is because you really look at it, their bracket's pretty tough, but the teams that they come up against are favorable to them. They're playing against second round, they get past Florida, they'll be playing against a Michigan team who Michigan, we all know early in the season, was a team that nobody really wanted to see. Throughout their conference schedule, they couldn't sustain a three-game win streak. As soon as they hit conference play, there was not a stretch within the conference that they won three games in a row. So, but go ahead.
They're going to be a tough team to match up with in the tournament because they got that sharpshooter at that five spot, man. They're going to be a tough team to match up with. And plus, I'm not even all the way convinced that Nevada even beats Florida.
Oh,
that's a pretty tough matchup for them.
I think it is, but I like Nevada in that matchup mostly because, I mean, Florida's a decent ball club, but, I mean, Florida lost 15 games this year. They went 19-15. And you look to their schedule and try to look at the key wins that they had. You can't point to any outside of LSU. And, I mean, do you really consider that as a key win?
I mean, it was the best team in their conference.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they beat LSU twice, but they lost to Kentucky twice. They lost to Tennessee twice. They lost to Florida State by 21. They lost to Michigan State. They lost to they beat Ole Miss by 4, which to me isn't really impressive either. But I just think a team like Nevada, I've been high on Nevada all year, and yeah, they hit some stumbles, mostly against San Diego State. For some reason, that team had their number. They got 4 losses on the year, and 2 of them came to San Diego State. So
you just don't see those teams make 2 Cinderella runs in a row. That's just something I just can't see happen. I can't see Nevada going too deep in the tournament this year.
I think that you don't see that run happen. You don't see that run happen too often because of the roster changes. But their roster has actually gotten a bit better than last year. And you couple that with the players that they have on their team that have actual experience, I think that this is a dangerous team in this tournament. I really do.
I mean, I agree that they might be a dangerous team, but, I mean, it's a lot of dangerous teams in here that can make a run. I just don't feel like Nevada's – I don't think we're going to be seeing Nevada in the second weekend. They might – I'm not saying they're going to lose to Florida, but
– You don't got them beating Michigan.
Nah, they're not going to be the Cinderella this year.
All right, I mean, I guess I can see that. I don't have them so much as a Cinderella because I don't have them going past who was I think I have them in my official bracket. I don't have them beating Michigan, I don't believe. I'm pretty sure.
It's hard for them to transition from nobody knowing about you and you sneaking up to people to now. Like, you're not sneaking up on nobody. We know who you are. We saw what you did last year. So,
yeah.
Florida going to come into this game fully prepared. And that's something they didn't have to deal with last year. The first weekend, nobody was preparing for Nevada at all.
Yeah, I can understand that. But even with preparation, I still don't see a Florida team beat Nevada. Now, Michigan, on the other hand, completely different story. But yeah, we'll just have to see. Like I said, there's a lot of interesting matchups to see. Now, as far as the rest of these teams are concerned, let's talk about the conference tournaments a bit. We saw Duke finally get over that hump against UNC. Now, Duke is still not even at full strength yet. We are missing the starting center, 7-footer Marquise Bolden, who is huge for us because he's for a 7-footer, he's got great feet. He switches well on pick and rolls. He affects just about everything at the basket. So with Duke being able to beat a Carolina team and a Florida State team who has a lot of length and height without this guy, is Duke now starting to find themselves in a situation to where they're like, okay, We have to figure out how to win without having our starting guy. So let's say Marquise Bolden doesn't come back for the rest of the tournament, which it's saying that he'll be back by the second weekend, if not the second round. Can Duke still run the table without Marquise Bolden?
Yeah, I think we can. But if we don't get that extra defense, then it's definitely going to take somebody to score the basketball. We need Cam to get his head out his ass, for one.
For fact.
And then, for two, we need Trey Jones to
We need him to be Trey Jones from last night.
Not even that. He just got to continue to be aggressive. He's got
I don't need him. Hitting shots. Exactly.
You
got to
make teams respect you. Like, we can't just have teams coming in like, all right, we know who's going to shoot the ball. Like, they got to have the game plan for the fact that you're going to shoot the ball too. And then that'll open up the passing for him as well. He's got to be aggressive. Like, he can't be out there just passing it around the perimeter.
I agree. And also, with everything that you said, along with that, we've got to get some production out of our bench guys, because now it seems like they're starting to fall into that I don't want to shoot the ball hole as well. We didn't have a lot of shot attempts from our bench players. And if you look at the box score, Duke beat Florida State with all five starters. Nobody from the bench scored at all. So
that's a problem.
That's a huge problem. And heading into the tournament, that's not something that you're going to be able to do and be successful for the long run.
Because I'm going to keep it a buck, man. Carolina a better team than us. They are, man. They got contributors all the way through their whole top eight or nine guys. Everybody coming in.
I will say they're deeper. They're definitely deeper.
Bro, we don't got nobody doing nothing for us but three guys, man. Everybody else is just rebounding and just out there, just extra guys causing extra defenders to be on the floor. Like, I think it's going to be our Achilles heel, bro. I hope not, but I really feel like we're going to get into this Sweet 16 or Elite Eight and need some offense and not going to be able to find it.
That's not an outlandish take at all. I mean – anybody who's watched Duke has seen that their Achilles heel has been trying to get some production out of somebody from outside of the big three or trying to find some perimeter shooting. Now, I look at that one of two ways. Duke has now found a way to be effective without even hitting the three. My other take from that is that only leaves one thing to happen. If you see a Duke team who's still beating teams without shooting good from the perimeter, I look at that as it's only up from here. I see a nice shooting performance coming from somewhere, whether it be Cam Reddish or Jack White or somebody that's going to have to shoot the ball. Because Cam Reddish didn't even shoot the ball much in the championship game. I think he had eight attempts, I want to say. And that was the least amount out of anybody that played or anybody that scored yesterday. So we're definitely going to need more production shooting or just people taking shots in general. So I think once that confidence kicks in as far as guys taking shots, they'll start to make shots. I think that's the biggest thing within couple of games.
We talking about guys getting confidence to shoot, and it's in March. We done played almost a whole season now. So it's like, when do you finally decide that you're a decent enough shooter to shoot the ball? We got maybe six games left. Six or less games left.
I definitely think that it's an inopportune time, like right now, to be thinking like, oh, well, right now is when I'm going to turn it on and start shooting the ball. But I think that that's what Coach K is going to drill into these guys' heads. Like, you saw the approach that he took, and I think that he's going to continue to tell these guys, if you're not going to go out there and shoot the ball, I don't even need you on the court. You saw Jordan Goldwire played more minutes than just about any of the other guys that have played majority of the year. If Jack White's not going to shoot the ball, he's going to be a spell guy for Zion when he gets tired. If Alex O'Connell doesn't want to shoot the ball, he won't even see the court. And I think that Coach K is going to continue to tell these guys that heading into the tournament. Like, I mean, what else are you going to do out there? You're not a defender, Alex. And Jack White hasn't been as much of a defender as he had been earlier in the year. So it's like you're not doing anything out there. You're going to have to shoot the ball.
You looking at it different than me. You optimistic that we're going to hit the three ball.
I'm not optimistic that we're going to hit it. I'm optimistic that we're going to start shooting it.
We shoot plenty of them.
Yeah, our guys, not from the guys that we need to start shooting the ball.
But I'm looking at it like, hopefully we can do what we can with this team to win it all, which is play great defense, get out on the break, and win that way. I feel like that's really the only way we can win the championship. I don't see us becoming a good shooting team out of nowhere at this point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with that. I don't want to make it seem like I'm saying that we are going to become a good shooting team, because I don't feel that way at all. I just think it's going to be more of a confidence thing. Like, we have to shoot the ball in order to space the court, even if it is just knocking down a couple of them and making teams come out a little bit. And now, okay, it's time. Like, now everything else opens up. Because right now, the way that teams have been playing us, that's why games have been so tight lately, because teams are doing exactly what teams should have been doing majority of the year. Nobody's coming outside of the paint at all. Like, they are literally packing everything in. And like you said, that, I mean, it could be our Achilles heel. And I don't know. We'll have to see. But let's not do this again, because we know how our listeners get when we talk Duke. So, yeah, man, is there any team before we get off of this, before we get off of the tournament, is there any team that you see that is – I guess headed for upset earlier than a lot of people think?
I personally think Tennessee may be the most vulnerable. It's just something about that team. I done watched them play a couple times, and it's just something about them that just don't scream Final Four to me. Now, I don't know what it is. I can't sit here and tell you what it is. I just do not think that is a Final Four team. Also, a team that I feel like people have kind of fell back from and nobody's talking about is Villanova. Now, they got a tough out in this first matchup against St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if they can knock off St. Mary's, I think that could go on a little run, because they can shoot that rock. I watched them play two of their games in the conference championship, and they got shooters everywhere. That's one thing they can do is shoot it. So a couple hot nights, and you could be looking up and seeing Villanova playing Elite Eight or somewhere, especially with nobody talking about them. I think Jay Wright's a real good coach when there isn't too much focus on them.
I can agree with that, and I'm glad you brought up Nova, because Nova's actually the team that I have on the bubble. And like you said, it's because they're playing against a pretty tough St. Mary's team. I actually, in my bracket, have them going home first round against St. Mary's.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. That's what I'm saying. If they got to win that game first. If they win that game, I think that'll be a good
confidence
builder. I don't think Purdue would be much of a challenge for them. I think they could definitely knock off of Purdue if they can beat the St. Mary's. They got to win that first game. That first game is tough. It's going to be a tough
one. I agree. Another team that I have on upset alert for the first round is Florida State against a Vermont team who a lot of people don't really pay a lot of attention to. But they've got a pretty good player in Anthony Lamb. I've caught them maybe once or twice this year, and he's impressed me both times. He averages 21-7 and 2 blocks per game, but the biggest thing that stands out to me is that this is a team that really controls the pace. They're not a team that's like, you're not going to be able to just run and gun against a team like this. They like to slow it down, get in the sets, and like I said, he averages seven rebounds by himself. But as a team, they rebound the ball pretty well. So that's to me a team that could definitely give teams fits early on. Outside of that, I think that's pretty much it for real. This isn't really
I just looked at something and seen something else that just struck me as, man, the SEC got some tough outs on here. I could see it. I could see them involved in a couple upsets. Auburn, New Mexico State. Whew.
Really? You think that?
Bro. That Auburn, New Mexico State, this like their third or fourth year in a row, I feel like they in the field. I feel like they ready to make some noise.
I mean, this isn't – yeah. New Mexico State's a pretty tough team, too.
LSU and Yale. I'm just saying that just because the Ivy League always got a team that always just try to make a run. They always almost beat somebody. So, LSU, I got them an upset alert. They're 14. Man. The SEC, they might be doing bad. They might be doing bad going into the second weekend, bro.
Oh, no, man. There wasn't too many SEC games that stood out to me that really – that definitely that that Auburn game now that I look more at it. But like I said, to me, it's more Big East teams. Like, I got Nova going down in the first round. Who else? Marquette, as we've already said, people look to Murray State because of John Morant, but Missouri State's not a bad overall ball club. Like, they've got some other guys that can score the ball as well. And I think that on this big stage, obviously, I feel like Ja's going to give us everything that he's capable of doing. But even alongside him, I think it's probably going to be one other guy on that team that's going to stand out. And I can see Nova going – or not Nova, Marquette going home in that first round as well.
Marquette ain't going home.
Watch what I tell
you. Ja Morant, the better talent, but the tournament is not about NBA players. It's about college players, which is Marcus Howard. That's a college player.
I understand. I think that he will definitely have a phenomenal game, but this is a team in Murray State who fills it up. Like, they fill it up as a team, bro. Like, they're the highest scoring team in the tourney.
Man, but they ain't playing nobody.
Oh. It don't matter about that at this time. But
Marquette about to get them, bro.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I'm reading it right now, and it says that they could be the popular upset pick in the first round. So, hey, our listeners, you heard it here first. I got Marquette losing that game. But, yeah, man, like I said, that's the game that I'm most excited for, though. I can't wait for that one just because of the offensive fireworks that we'll see. But, Let's move forward a little bit. We touched on a conference tournament. Let's talk NBA a little bit, man. MVP race. What's your take on the MVP, man? What you got it looking like?
I mean, I think it's still the same couple people, but I think
who's your favorite right now? You still think it's James Harden?
Nah, I'm gonna go with Giannis. I'm going to go with Giannis and then James Harden at number two. And Paul George right there at three. And then I got Steph at four. And that's who I got my top four. But Steph, he just, you know, they got to fill out the whole whatever.
Mm-hmm.
However many. But Steph ain't really got a chance at winning, especially not with these little bit of games left. It's really a two-man race, really, I think.
I agree.
Paul George would have to go stupid bonkers down the stretch of the season for him to win MVP.
Yeah, I agree. As far as I'm concerned, I got Giannis as my pick too. And reason being is because I think James Harden has had a good year this year, but I think a lot of the voters look to that back-to-back MVP. Like, it's not too many people that have done that. And I don't think that they look at James Harden in that same light as the other guys who have. Not to say that he's not deserving of it if he does win it. But I just think that what Giannis is doing right now is really gaudy. Like, he's really taking that Eastern Conference by its neck. And, I mean, let's be honest. This isn't the LeBron Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference isn't by no means strong, but it's stronger than it has been. He's got guys out there like Kawhi, who's also in that Eastern Conference, that he's taking his team to a level that is really showing that they can compete as well. And don't look now, but them Celtics starting to gain a little traction too heading into this playoff. So I'm extremely impressed with Giannis. And tonight he had, what, 52? So, yeah.
52 today?
Yeah, he went for 52 against Philly. They lost by 5, but, yeah, he went for 52 tonight. So, like I said, what he's been doing is really good, and that's MVP to me. So as of right now, that's what my MVP is as well. I'm excited for the playoffs. I think the East is going to be good, but we'll touch on about the Eastern Conference a little later. Let's talk one of the popular topics that we got to talk every week, man. It's LeBron and the Lakers. It's crazy that we have to keep talking about it, but it's crazy that something else continues to happen. Like, every week is always something that goes on. And as of late, it's been LeBron's comments and the way that he's been, acting toward the team and the things that they've been going through with injuries and stuff like that. So LeBron came out and made a statement saying, I would have loved to make the playoffs this year, but that's just not in the cards and this, this, and that, that. A lot of people didn't like that. And a lot of people also haven't liked his mannerisms. Walt Frazier, the famous Nick, is the most recent guy who's come out and spoken out about LeBron and his acts. And he basically went off on LeBron for LeBron distancing himself from the team and sitting at the end of the bench when they were in huddles and things like that. And it's screaming to me that, to me, I hate to say this because of how great of a player he is, but LeBron is a diva, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I had this conversation with my dad. It's like you don't want to put this blame on LeBron, but why is it that when every time LeBron has a situation with a coach, it always seems to, I don't know, it just seems to be so reoccurring to me, and I don't like it at all. What's your take on this whole, I guess, LeBron and Lakers saga?
Well, you know, you pretty much consider me a LeBron fan.
Yeah.
He's not like my favorite player, but he's definitely like my second favorite player in the league. But
been that way for a while too.
Yeah, just recently, I don't recognize this guy. Like, even though he has some of this stuff has happened, like as far as coaches and stuff, this guy that I'm watching, I haven't recognized him. The only time I ever seen anything close to this out of LeBron was after J.R. Smith did that bonehead shit in game one in the finals. Mm-hmm. That's the only other time I've ever seen LeBron like check out in the game like he has been doing time after time this season. Like, I've never seen it, regardless of what the situation was, whatever deck he talking about, the cards, whatever. He never acted like this, man. He checked out a long time ago. I don't know what's going on, who this guy is. He let Mario Hezonja block the game today.
Right.
Who is this guy? I don't know. It's just starting to be hard to watch. And I'm starting to question, like, okay, yeah, you beat Father Time for a year, but did he catch up to you? Because, I mean, his numbers is there, but it's not affecting wins at all.
Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing with LeBron is that it's not necessarily what he does. It's the way that he affects the game. Like, LeBron can go out there and score however many points, but it's going to have a huge effect on the outcome of the game.
Because this ain't no shot at Kobe, but towards the end of his career, he was getting his numbers, but it was not helping the team whatsoever. And I feel like it's just because once you get a little older, it's little things on the court that numbers don't measure that you're not able to do anymore. And I think that's what we're seeing out of LeBron. Like, he can't take them extra couple steps out to close out on that three-point shooter and get back to the rim and get the rebound now. He can't do all them things, and now it's starting to show he need a little bit more talent around him. It ain't no shame in it. Like, damn, people act like you can't be the best player in the world forever. You about to be in your mid-30s.
It's getting there. It's closing in, and you've had a phenomenal career your entire time. But to me, it's more like, it's extremely similar to the Kobe situation to me. It's because when, like you said, later in Kobe's career, I'll say like his last 2 years, because that 1 year he didn't even play. But the last two active years that he had an opportunity to groom some young guys and help them come along. Even if it wasn't to help them be better that season, it could have helped them be better in the long run. And he didn't do that. He was, like you said, he was out there getting his numbers, but it wasn't to benefit the team at all. And that's what I'm seeing with LeBron too. And I'm torn, because a part of me is like you said, I've never seen this guy. So I'm kind of skeptical about whether it's Father Time or not, or whether it's just LeBron having a hissy fit, trying to show the front office, I can't win with these guys, nor with this coach. So we definitely got to make something happen in this offseason.
I know he's a businessman, but I don't think he got that in him, man. I don't think that he could just not go to the playoffs just to prove a point. I don't think he's that type of guy, man.
I do.
That would make me lose so much respect for him if he really did that shit on purpose just to prove a point.
Maybe that's why I've been the way I've been about LeBron for this long. Like, I feel like LeBron cares about winning, but LeBron does not care about winning as much as the other greats that we've seen. And that, to me, is like a reason as to why I don't respect him that much. Is because I feel like he doesn't value winning. I feel like he values winning. He doesn't overvalue winning like the rest of the stars do. And that, to me, is why I feel the way that I feel about him this year, is that I honestly believe LeBron is really feeling like, fuck it. This is like, we couldn't trade for AD right now. All right, well, I'm just going to show y'all that we can't win with these guys. So this is what it is.
I think him taking the back seat is him trying to save face. For one, because he said a couple weeks ago before the losing streak, when he came back, he said playoff mode activated. And then now all of a sudden it's just not in the car. So you clearly was going to try for it, and you realized that it was going to be too hard, or you didn't think you was going to be able to do it or whatever. But I think what happened with LeBron was he signed on to do this rebuilding project, but in his mind he was like, this ain't gonna be no rebuild. I could take whoever, wherever. And then he got there and it really was gonna be a rebuild, and it was just easier said than done. He thought he was gonna be able to wait, but I think that it's eating away at him that he's not about to be in the playoffs. If it's not yet, it's going to when they start. Like, there's no way you're gonna tell me that he been in the finals for 8-9 straight years and now he just not gonna be in the playoffs at all. And he just okay with that. I'm not buying that.
I kind of believe that, though. Like, I honestly believe that LeBron going to take this offseason like, shit, I finally get to spend some time with my family. I finally get a summer off. Like, I think that LeBron is getting to that age now to where he's like, I've always felt this way about LeBron, though. LeBron is a phenomenal basketball player, but I feel like LeBron does not he doesn't eat, sleep, and breathe basketball like a lot of other NBA players was. And that's not a bad thing at all. It's by no means a bad thing. But I think that right there is what's going to help this process. It's going to make it a lot easier for him to cope with. I mean, you see him showing up at Laker games with bottles of wine and stuff. Like, Bron is comfortable. Bron, like, fuck it. Like, it is what it is. I feel like he's content with the way that he's going out. And as crazy as this might sound, this might be a hot take, but I wouldn't be surprised to see LeBron retire within a couple of years, especially depending on what goes on with the Lakers within this next year or so.
I'll give you a hotter take. Go ahead and sit her down now if you don't even care about what else is going to happen. Just go ahead and sit her down.
Yeah. But I mean,
what's the point?
That's true, but I don't know, man. I'm a little iffy about that. But another scenario is this Brandon Ingram thing. How serious do you think that blood clot was in his arm?
I mean, they said the surgery was successful, so it clearly wasn't as bad as whatever Chris Bosh had going on.
Yeah, because that's what I was seeing. I was seeing a lot of comparisons, like, oh, this shit could be serious. You see what happened to niggas like Chris Bosh and stuff like that? And I'm like, yeah, but a part of me, like, I'd never want to take anyone's injuries for granted or take them lightly, because you never know what somebody's going through. But my initial reaction to this was, oh, tank mode. Like, we're going into tank mode. For one, because you have the statement come out a couple of days before Brandon Ingram Before this story comes about of Brandon Ingram, you get a story that says, okay, LeBron's minutes are now going to be scaled back. Like, it's the Lakers were slowly but surely taking steps back out of, like, actually making a push for the playoffs. First thing was LeBron James's minutes are going to be cut back. Second thing, Brandon Ingram out for the season. He has to have surgery. Third thing, Lonzo Ball will not return for the rest of the year. Those, to me, day one, day two, day three. They happened within a 3-day span. So to me, that was like, okay, like, it does look like we're going into tank mode. And then also, within that same span, they also sat Kyle Kuzma for no, like, he didn't have an injury. They just didn't play him. They said he had an injury, but he came back the next game, like, perfectly fine. But, yeah, I think that the Lakers were going more into tank mode. more than anything. And also another thing that really stood out to me, or that popped into my head, I'm not sure if anyone else saw it this way, but I still think that the Lakers see Brandon Ingram as trade leverage. And I think that as great as he had been playing down that stretch, I think that's the last impression that they wanted teams to have of Brandon Ingram. So if they still have sights on trading him in the offseason, which I don't advise them to do at all, I think that this boded well for them. Because you look back to, okay, he just had surgery, so he's good now. But what was he doing before that surgery? He was going crazy. He was really out there looking like what we expect him to look like in the future. So to me, that was a bit of what I took from that whole situation. I'm not sure if that's what it was, but that's what it looked like to me on the outside. But
yeah, I can see that, but still, he had surgery on it, so he clearly really had some blood clot issues.
Yeah,
so.
But we don't know how severe that surgery was or what type of surgery it was at all. Just like people say all the time that players have surgery, but it's just a cleanup surgery. So we don't necessarily know the severity of it. But like I said, I never want to take anybody's injuries for light. I hope that if it was something serious, that he's all good to go now. And they said it's successful, so I hope that that's what we see moving forward. But yeah, let's move forward. Let's talk free agency a little bit, man. We won't stay on it for too long since we got playoffs coming up, and free agency probably won't be a popular topic until after certain teams start getting eliminated. But two players that are really, I guess, big players in this year's free agency are Kevin Durant and Kyrie. What's your take on them two? Do you think that they have a good chance of possibly teaming up this summer?
Yeah, I'll give it a good 45% chance. I think it's possible they end up in New York together, but the only thing is that front office is so dysfunctional. I don't know that you go there. That's the only thing that I think will stop that from happening. I think KD might actually end up staying in Golden State now. And I think Kyrie might end up going to LA, because I don't think y'all getting Anthony Davis, man.
Well, I don't even know how I feel about the Anthony Davis. Obviously, I still want Anthony Davis, but I'm not sure where I stand with what the Lakers are going to do this offseason. I never really know with that. But as far as Kyrie and KD, I felt earlier within this year that they had a very big chance of going to New York together. But
me too.
To me, everything went out the window once Porzingis was no longer there. I don't feel like there's anything appealing about New York anymore to both of those guys outside of the fact that it's New York.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't think that they have a very big chance of going. I honestly believe that KD was going to stay in Golden State regardless, but I felt like it was definitely appealing for him to go to New York. I felt if Kyrie would have went to New York along with Porzingis, then KD would have probably been like, you know what? I'm not necessarily against that. Back on the East Coast, like, I might want to do that. But now that, like I said, Porzingis is no longer there, I don't think that either one of them. I think Kyrie has a better chance of looking at it like, you know what? I can go there and really make this my team. And
if I'm going to go to New York, man, I'm going to Brooklyn.
I think maybe for KD, definitely not Kyrie. I don't think he wants to go down there with a guy like D'Angelo Russell.
But I mean, if you're going to go to New York, shit, both. I'd rather play with D'Angelo Russell, and Kyrie can go to the two.
Hey, you know Kyrie does not want to go to the two.
That's what he play like anyway. Well, except for recently, he had 30 and 10 for back-to-back games for the first time.
Yeah.
It's like 2010,
Yeah, I mean, it's I can understand that if Kyrie struck me as a guy that wanted to play the two, but he does not want to play the two at all. Obviously, his skill set would benefit from it, but I don't think mentally he sees himself as that type of guy. But, yeah, let's who else? Kawhi is going to be a free agent this year. I don't think he's leaving now.
Me either. I think he loved it there.
Me too, which surprised me a bit because I thought that he would probably take this year as, all right, I just want to show people that I still got it. But now that he's seeing, like, oh, we can really make a push. And now that they got Mark Gasol down there, whoo-wee. I'm telling you, we about to talk about that. But, yeah, I think that Kawhi stays down there, and Kawhi could be there for a while. He could be there for a long time. But who else?
I don't see why superstars don't want to go to a market where it's a country with one team. You got that whole country, bro.
That's true. You saw how
or continent, really.
How crazy it was with Vincennity. Like,
I said continent, I'm fine.
Yeah. Country, yeah. But yeah, with Vincennity and how he basically had all of that and how he became a household name. Like, I feel like there are huge perks to being out there. So,
and he got his own shoe brand, and it's not Nike or nothing. He got New Balance.
Yeah,
he can go crazy with the endorsements. He can have New Balance on another level in Canada, man.
That's true, and I think maybe he'll start to see that within the years to come. Because, like I said, I don't think he'll be leaving anytime soon. So I think that'll be huge for him. What other free agents are there? Jimmy Butler? Where you see Jimmy going this summer?
I think the best bet for him was to stay in Philly.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, where else you think he should go?
I don't necessarily know where I think he should go, but I think Jimmy going to chase the money. And Philly not going to offer him what other teams are going to offer him, because Philly know that they're going to want to offer their guys here soon.
Yeah, that's a fact.
So
But, I mean, who going to max him out? It's going to be like the Magic or somebody.
It would surprise me. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a team that's really good. Like, I think it's going to be a team that's like, you know what, we got a couple young pieces. We could probably get Jimmy to come down here and buy in and just offer him a lot of money. But, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I can't really see too many places offering him, but I think somebody will. Somebody's going to offer him big money. Could be.
What about maybe the Kings?
Could be the Kings. I was thinking somebody more like the Nets.
The Nets is cool. The Hawks, maybe. Clippers.
I can definitely see the Clippers, but I feel like the Clippers got their sights set on the super big fish. Like they're Anthony Davis, Kawhi, Kyrie plugged in. I think that's what they're looking at. But I don't think they're going to have any luck with that. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them offer Jimmy.
You don't like a Jimmy Butler with a Trae Young?
I think that would be cool. I'm not against it, but I'm not necessarily 100% for it. Like, I don't see much of a plus coming out of that, outside of the fact that you got a good defender next to Trae Young and somebody to take a little bit of the load off of him. But I don't think I love him going to the Hawks, and I don't think he loves that either.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out who really would max him out. I don't think I think Jimmy Butler's good, but I don't think he's a max guy. If he's your max guy, you're
in trouble.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see. But, like, the reason why I said the Nets is because the Nets have shown that they're willing to pay top dollar for certain players. I mean, they tried to fucking max out Otto Porter last year. So, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they try to max out Jimmy B. But, yeah, I think that's pretty much it as far as the big-name free agents. Let's talk mock draft a little bit. Obviously, right now, it's looking like the unanimous. Zion's the number one pick, and rightfully so to me. A couple of weeks ago, if you would ask me this, I would have said teams are probably better off taking RJ if you're looking for talent. But like you brought up a couple episodes ago, is you got to look more into ticket sales and stuff like that. And you know Zion's bringing all of that with him. So that was a plus in his favor. But now I think that it's not even close. Like, I feel like he's the outright number one overall pick. But what are some other notable guys that you see that could go pretty high in the draft?
I'm looking at a mock draft right now. And some things have been shaken up.
Have they? Yeah. What's it looking like now?
Well, this one they got.
And who is it? Is it like a reliable one or just anybody?
Not this NBA.
Oh, what's it looking like?
And they got John Morant going too.
Ooh.
To Phoenix, though. To Phoenix. So that makes
sense. Yeah.
Then they got RJ to Cleveland at 3. And then.
That would be spooky.
Rui Hachimura at 4.
I like Rui Chicago. A lot.
Yeah, me too. They got Kobe White at 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Oof. So where'd Cam fall to?
They got Cam at 8 behind Keldon Johnson.
Going where?
Washington.
It's not bad. I think that Ja's definitely gonna go pretty high. Like I've already thought, it depends a lot on how the lottery plays out. Because if Phoenix does really get the number 2 pick, I feel like that's a perfect snag for them. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
I don't think it gets any better than that. Mostly because of his skill set. He's a phenomenal scorer, but people don't know how great of a passer he is. He's a phenomenal passing guard. He's like I said this before, but he reminds me a lot of an under control Russell Westbrook. And he's not like a stat chaser. He makes the right plays. I feel like he's a good snag for them, especially with them having Devin Booker. As far as the other guys go, I feel like it's almost a lock for 1 and 2 to be Zion and RJ, unless, like I said, that one of those picks goes to Phoenix. Let's say Phoenix just so happens to get that number 1 pick. Do you pair Zion with DeAndre Ayton?
No.
I don't think so either.
I think you got to take Zion still, though. If you get one.
I think if you get one, now you got trade bait.
Yeah.
I think more than anything, if Phoenix gets number 1, it's time to talk trade. Because you don't draft Zion with this current roster. You don't get better. You don't get better at all. But, yeah, I'm interested to see how that plays out as well. But I'm not too against what that looks like. Speaking of mock draft, just something real quick. You think Trey Jones comes out after this year?
I hope not. But, I mean, you should. If they say you a fringe first rounder, how do you not?
I think that I'm hoping that he learned from his brother and decides to stay. I think Tyus's situation was a little different than his. Tyus was more of a, shit, coming back another year, what really is it going to do for me? Because he had the tools. It was just he lacked defense, and that wasn't something he was going to learn by coming back for another year. His brother, however, is in a much more beneficial situation. His flaw is something that can be worked on within a year, which is a consistent jump shot. We've seen guys such as like a Marcus Smart come back and improve his draft stock on the year by coming back and learning how to shoot a bit. We're not saying that he has to come out and be a lights out shooter, but he has to be more consistent. I think coming back is much more beneficial to him, but he's going to see all of his guys go. And I think that's going to lead him into shit. I'm gone too.
That learning thing is just so tricky because whatever you can learn in college, you can learn in the NBA or the G League while getting paid. See, I don't look at Trey Jones' situation. I mean, Tyus Jones' situation to be bad because he still ended up signing an NBA contract. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't play right away, but he still was getting paid as opposed to being taken advantage of in the NCAA. So if you tell me I always try to put myself in the guy's shoes. If you tell me I'm a possible first rounder or early second rounder, I'm gone. Just as long as you don't tell me that it's a possibility that I'm going to go undrafted. If you tell me I might go undrafted, then I'm probably going to stay at school. But if you tell me I'm a I'm a first round or early second round pick, I'm gone, bro. I'm not coming back to school.
That's the thing, though. You never really know. Like, I feel like he can get snagged, but you look at guys that have left and should have come back. A guy like Trayvon Duval, like, yeah, he's on a roster now, but he went undrafted. So now he's not getting that money that he should have been getting or that he could have been getting if he would have came back for another year. And I,
yeah, but somebody gave Trayvon some bad advice because I would have never told that man to leave.
Agreed. And I don't think Trey Jones should leave either. So I
personally don't think he should either. But I think that we judge him based off him playing on our team as opposed to the NBA is based off all potential now. If they see potential in you, that's all you need, bro. That's all you need. You don't got to prove nothing else to them. That if they tell you you're going to be in the first round, like this mock draft I'm looking at, they got him at 33. So that's early second round, like second pick in the second round. I'm gone.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that because it is exactly like you said. Nowadays, it's definitely based off of potential. It's guys that have gotten drafted in a lottery that I haven't even heard about since they got drafted. What's Cuz's name from Florida State, I think, is where he was at. He went to Orlando.
Isaac.
Yeah, Jonathan Isaac. I ain't heard a lick about him. So, I mean, yeah, I feel what you're saying. I feel for him. If right now they got you projected as going early second round, come back. I don't feel like you hurt yourself coming back. Your draft stock's going to improve. You're already a phenomenal defender. You come back next year. I mean, I don't think coming back next year hurts him at all. It only improves.
Unless he get hurt or something.
Yeah, but we've been through that. Getting hurt anytime.
Right, but then you could go ahead and get drafted and get under this contract as soon as possible. That's what I'm saying. You go get this chicken. If you know you can go get that money, go get that money. Forget raising your draft stock unless you know you're going to be a top five pick next year. Like, I'm with raising your draft stock if you late lottery this year and you're going to be early lottery next year. But if we talking about going from, what, 33rd to 20th, man, go get your money.
I don't think that. I think you jump from early 30th to a potential lottery pick if you come back and show that you can shoot next year because he's got all of the other tools. And, like you said, if it's based off of potential, then they thinking, okay, maybe we can turn him into a respectable shooter. Or if not, worst case scenario, we turn him into a guy like Rondo.
Why go back to school to learn how to shoot, though? That's what I'm saying. You could learn. You could get on the gun in the NBA just as easy as you can in college.
But it's not as easy to work in college as it is in the NBA because you have a game every other night almost. You don't have the luxury of being able to just shoot around and all of that stuff. And these young guys that's coming into the NBA, they're not thinking – okay, I'm on my free time, I'm going to work. Nah, they think in my free time, I'm about to chill. I just got me this whip. I'm about to go riding around. I'm about to enjoy the city. I don't see him as a guy that's going to have that crazy type of work ethic. And James Harden just traveled something terrible and they ain't call it. But
I think you go get the money
Go get the money if you need the money. And I don't see him as being in that position or where he needs money.
I mean, shit, everybody need money.
Yeah, but he's not hurting for money.
Yeah, but, man, if you tell me I'm a first to early second round, I'm gone, man.
I understand. I mean, I'm not saying he'd be stupid if he came out. I just think that it would be more beneficial for him to come back for another year. That's not even coming from a fan standpoint either. That's just most times when I see guys like him, I'm like, yeah, I could see him going to the league, but if he goes to the league, for one, where are you going to go? For two, who's to say that you're not going to be stockpiled on somebody's roster for a year and then a couple of years where you at? Nowhere to be found. You find yourself in the G League. So I think I'm thinking more long term than short term. I think if he comes back for another year, then teams are more likely to keep him around for a bit. I think right now that if he comes out right now, team's tolerance level for him is going to be really short.
See, I think basketball is a sport to where if you're going to get better, you're going to get better regardless of who you're playing against or what you're doing. As long as you're working on your game, you're going to get better. Like, once you hit your wall, then you hit your wall. But I think as long as you're putting in work, you're going
to
get better.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that in college, you have more time to do that, to be able to work on your game. You don't have the luxury of being able to do that as frequently in the NBA as you do in college.
Oh, no. I think it might be the other way around, considering classes and stuff.
Classes, you being a college student, you know classes not shit, bro. You be done by class, done with classes by a certain time. You got practice, then you chilling. Like, you could pretty much do whatever. Like, we, how many times was we around football players and basketball players at Marshall? Like, all the time. Like, they was just chilling in their apartments. In the NBA, you don't got that luxury, bro. You on planes every other day, going somewhere else.
Look at what school we talking about being at. Zion and them ain't chilling in between classes. They in the gym. These the guys we talking about. They in the gym.
That's my point, like, though. That's my point. If you in the gym at college, you got that opportunity to be able to work on your game.
That's when you in the NBA. That's your only job is to play basketball, man. When you in college, you wearing three hats.
I understand that, but I don't think that wearing that three hats in college is going to prevent you from working on your game as much as being in the NBA is. I feel like there's much more temptation, or much more of a reason for you to not work on your game once you're starting to get paid now, and you got, like I said, you travel the majority of the time, and the time that you're not traveling, you in a city that you probably never even been in. You better believe you're probably going to explore the city. You probably got you a new whip. You probably got you a little joint out there. You're going to be all over the place.
Them same temptations exist in college, bro.
They do, but it's a lot harder to access in college than it is in the league. And the league is at your disposal. In college, you got curfew and shit. You're not out whenever.
Man, them guys do whatever they want, man.
I don't believe that. I believe that to a certain extent. But, yeah, let's jump. Before we get off this NBA topic, let's talk Eastern Conference favorites. Who's your favorite to come out the East right now?
I'm going with Milwaukee. I think Giannis going to do it. I think Giannis going to do it.
I don't. And right now they are the one seed, and it looks good, but initially coming into the season, I had Boston as my favorite to come out the East. And they're still in the conversation. But right now, to me, the team that looks most dangerous in that East is Toronto. And I think Kawhi's the guy that takes them over the hump and finally gets them to where they need to be. I think a lot of it's going to depend on where the seeding falls. Because right now, the Celtics are at 5. They are one game back out of fourth, two games back out of third. I think it depends on how that plays out. I think if the Bucks end up getting an easier road and they face a team like the Pacers or somebody like that, then, yeah, I can see them. But I think in a head-to-head matchup, I'm taking Toronto. I like Toronto in that. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Milwaukee win it. Yes, I will. I'm not even going to lie. I'd be surprised to see Milwaukee win the conference, even with them being the number one seed.
So, head-to-head, you taking Kawhi over Giannis?
I am. And it's not even so much as Giannis over Kawhi or Kawhi over Giannis. It's more of Kawhi and a supporting cast that's like, okay, now we have a guy that's going to lead us for one. Let's not act like this isn't a team who's not – already been like pretty much loaded year in, year out as far as making it to the playoffs and being that team. They just have not had that guy to take them over the hump. And I think Kawhi's that guy. Then you couple that with them adding in a guy like Mark Gasol. That's a tough task to have to deal with. And I'm liking Mark Gasol over Brooke Lopez in that matchup.
What about Middleton?
I like Chris Middleton. But I don't think for an entire series Chris Middleton is going to be the sidekick that they need in order for them to win that series.
He was a pretty good one last year in Boston.
I think he'll be cool. I just don't think he'll be super consistent. And even if he is, I don't know who else I'm taking off of that roster to be super effective. I think Kyle Lowry has a good series. Well, he's been spotty in the playoffs, so I mean that still remains to be seen. But
as it looks like right now, though, it's going to be Toronto versus Philly.
That's going to be a tough series, but I still like Toronto. I think that takes a lot out of the Toronto-Milwaukee series because Philly and Toronto are going to go to the wire, I believe.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Philly is going to beat Toronto, but out of the other two teams, I think that's the best. That's the best matchup they can get.
Who, Philly?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
They match up better with Toronto than they do with Milwaukee or Boston.
I agree 100%. I think that whole second round of the Eastern Conference is going to be exciting because I think we'll get Boston and Milwaukee. We'll get Toronto and Philly. I think that'll be exciting. Both of those series will be. And it really depends on which Boston team we get. Like I said, Boston is starting to look hot as of late. So if they continue this trend into the playoffs, that's not going to be a team that a lot of people want to see.
This is the first time the East – well, I think last year was pretty interesting too. Because, I mean, we even though –
it was interesting from a surprising standpoint though.
Yeah, even though we knew that – at the end of the chapter, LeBron was going to be there. It still was kind of interesting to watch how it played out to get there. But this year, we really don't know who's coming out the East at all. It's going to be extremely interesting. I think the playoffs are going to be nice this year.
I think so, too. I think it'll definitely be very competitive. But now let's talk one of the most hot topics of this week. NFL. We had a lot going on, man. I said this last week, I believe it was. I posted on my Facebook. This has been the most exciting NFL offseason that I've ever witnessed within my 27 years of life. Odell goes to the Browns. He went to the Cleveland Browns. What did you make of that trade? Do you think that do you think it was a good trade for the Giants? Obviously, it was a great trade for the Browns. Do you think it was a good trade for the Giants as well?
You can't say for sure. It's too early to say. But one thing I will say is, I told you, Brad, these NFL GMs and owners or whoever's calling the shots, they think that anybody is replaceable. Now, like I said, I'm not saying they right or anything like that. I'm just saying
that's their standpoint. Like
they feel like they can replace any player. You're not that good. That's how they feel. Like there'll be another you is what they be telling these players basically with the moves that they
apparently. Play. Apparently, that's what the Giants think. As far as I'm concerned, I think that it was a good trade for the Giants in the long run. Because there was nothing that the Giants could have gotten in the draft this year that makes them a contender or makes them that much better to where when it comes time for Odell to become a free agent that he thinks like, nah, I don't want to leave because we got something special here. I think right now you're killing two birds with one stone. You take an extra step in getting better for the future as well as not having to pay a guy like Odell or not have to worry about a guy like Odell leaving you in free agency when it's time for him to get offered that big money. You could have offered him the money, but who's to say that he didn't walk because he wanted to compete for a championship? So
right.
I think that from that standpoint, you look good. Obviously, what I expect to happen is if he's still on the board, I expect him to take, obviously, Dwayne Haskins with their first pick. Then with their second first round pick that they just got from the Browns, I expect them to take DK Metcalf if he's still there. Mostly because obviously you just lost huge production out of your wide receiving core. you want to bring in a guy like DK Metcalf and make him feel as if this is your show now. We got a young quarterback. We got a young wide receiver. Y'all get y'all's chemistry right, and we'll see where we can go in the future. And I think that that's where they'll go. If DK Metcalf isn't on the clock when they get to their second pick, now you look at it from a standpoint as if, was this trade really worth it? Because now who are we going to draft? Or can we trade this draft pick for something? Like, now your back is against the wall. It didn't work out the way you had it planned. So it could go one of two ways. But I think more than anything, the biggest takeaway from this is that the Cleveland Browns are ready to contend. They're ready. They're ready.
They're not looking at it as a coach's tenure that they've been struggling. They looking at it like, shit, we've been struggling as a franchise for years. Fact. We tired of that shit. We ready to contend now. I don't care how long the coach been here. I don't care how long the quarterback been here. We ready to win now.
And what better time? I feel like this is the best time for them to have that mindset, seeing as everybody else in their division is starting that trend downwards. You look at a team like Pittsburgh, who now, who do they have? Juju? Like, is that your biggest, the biggest thing that you have to worry about is Juju? I mean, James Conner's cool, but, I mean, this isn't a team that I'm really looking at as far as fearing anymore. I'm not looking at any teams in my division like, it's going to be an uphill climb for us, fellas. Right now, I'm looking at this shit is wide open. So why not? Let's go ahead and load up this roster and make a run at it. I think right now is the best time that they could have possibly got their roster to where it is. And not only that, I feel like the OBJ trade was perfect because you got the situation with Jarvis Landry. You got the situation with them being best friends. You got the situation with Kareem Hunt. This, obviously, that was a situation to where a lot of people were like, I don't know if they should have picked him up. You had mixed feelings about that. So now you shine the light completely off of that. Now your whole fan base is hype because y'all got Odell. So now you don't got to worry about, oh, damn, man, I can't believe we drafted Kareem Hunt and all the mixed feelings and the turmoil behind that, not to mention his suspension that you knew was coming.
Right.
So I feel like right now, It's a wonderful time to be a Cleveland Browns fan, and it's been a long time since anybody said that. But I felt like that was great for Cleveland. But we just talked Pittsburgh. AB is now a Raider. Is that good for his career? Is that good for Oakland? What does that mean?
I don't know if it'll be good for his career or not, but I think that this was something that had to be done for both parties. I think that whatever he could do for Pittsburgh, he had already done.
Mm-hmm.
And his time there was just over. It was just time for them to part ways. So I think that was just a good thing for both teams.
I agree. I think more than anything, this trade is now going to let Oakland know that, okay, we need to go in a different direction with our quarterback. Now, this is really going to be his season to show whether or not he's their guy. There's no excuses. He's got Odell. He's got an Antonio Brown. If I'm not mistaken, they still got Jordy Nelson. They still got Martavis Bryant, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's got Jared Cook, who showed last year that he's a phenomenal tight end.
He's been nice.
Yeah, he's been nice, but last year I felt like was his year to really show everybody, like, this is it. Like, y'all have one of the best tight ends in the league now. Now that you got the guys on the outside, you got your wide outs. Now it's on you. It's on you, Derek Carr. You got to show us what you made of. So I think that this is good for them. It's going to show whether or not he's their guy. And early on, I thought he was. Last year, I took some steps back, and I don't necessarily feel like he's that guy anymore. But we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. But I like the trade. Because AB is going to a situation now where he's got all the freedom in the world. Like, it's him. This is your show. You didn't have to worry about being in a franchise where they pretty much were it was all about Big Ben. Like, it is still that way. Their GM has come out and said that Big Ben can still play, can still be our strong quarterback for multiple years. This isn't that, that, which clearly is not the case. But
they want him to be Tom Brady so bad.
That's what it seems like to me, too. But yeah, I think that it was good for AB to get up out of Pittsburgh. Now that we've talked AB, it's only right we talk Le'Veon. Le'Veon's no longer in Pittsburgh either. He went to New York. A lot of people were puzzled by that decision. What did you think about him going to New York?
I thought he would go somewhere to contend. I ain't going to lie. I thought he would try to go somewhere to contend. But, hey, I guess that was really, from what I had heard, like, as far as, like, analysts and stuff, that was one of – basically the only team really trying to get him.
Yeah.
But they really kind of overpaid for him.
Yeah, I heard that as well. Also heard that late within him deciding that he was going to go there, right before he decided he was going to go there, the 49ers threw their hat in the ring too. And that's what made the Jets up their price a little bit. So I feel like it worked out for Le'Veon. I think that it's cool. I think a lot of people are looking at it on the surface. They're looking like, why would he go there? He can't compete right now. The Jets have a top NFL defense. They've got a young star or a young future star in Sam Darnold. I think that this is good for him.
Yeah, because with Le'Veon, you basically getting a running back and a receiver.
Yeah. I feel like it's only going to help Sam Darnold. And
that's what it's about for the Jets.
Yeah, definitely for the Jets. And also with Le'Veon, I feel like you're with a guy that, like I said, I've always felt like Le'Veon had this little bit of an ego type thing. And now he's in a situation where he's pretty much the face of the offense. Yeah, Sam Darnold is the future of the offense. But as for right now, Sam Darnold's going to need you to succeed more than you're necessarily going to need him. So I think that it was a good pick for him. He also said he was a Curtis Martin fan growing up, so it came full circle. That's dope. But I'm anxious to see what he's going to do. I think that it's going to be a pretty good year for the Jets. I think that it's going to be better than people think because of how good the Jets' defense is. That's what allows Sam Darnold to be able to grow. Their defense is a lot better than people give them credit for because of their offensive struggles. Their defense is out there extended periods of time, and they'll get a big stop, then have to go right back out there, and it leads to teams then being able to score on them late in the game because they're tired. But as far as their personnel and their talent on that defense is concerned, they're a really good defense. I actually had them in fantasy this year and just picked them up because I needed a defense to draft, and I just picked somebody, and it turned out to be great. So – yeah, their defense is really good, better than people give them credit for. But excuse me, like I've said, man, this has been a big time off season. We've seen players sign in different places, and teams get even better. We saw the Rams pick up Eric Weddle, which I cannot wrap my head around it. Like, what the fuck is going on? How are they? Why does this keep happening? Like, it's like summer after summer, like they just keep getting better. I know you like that. I know you did.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've been seeing here as of late, I'm not necessarily sure if this is something that is going to happen. But I follow a lot of the Cowboys. Like the Cowboys, in-house talk pages. And a lot of the talks that I'm getting is that the Cowboys are looking into signing Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, well, I figured he'd only be with us for about a year.
I think that would be huge. What do you think that does for y'all if y'all lose a player like him?
I mean, I think we'll find a way to replace him somehow. With somebody.
I don't know. I don't know if a guy like that's replaceable because he's – I mean, obviously y'all's defense is strong enough to where if y'all don't find like a valuable replacement, y'all won't take a huge step back because y'all are so strong in so many other facets of y'all's of the game as far as defense is concerned. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously Eric Weddle was a huge step in that direction. Like, was that James Harden just took a charge? Oh no, that ain't James Harden. I was about to say, but yeah, let's. What about the combine though? Did you see anything in the combine that stood out to you?
Not really. I ain't really watching much of it. I mean, I seen that D tackle from Alabama ran that fast ass 40, and then I mean, DK Metcalf and his combine was pretty crazy. But, like, nah, I just saw little bits and pieces on social media. I didn't really pay attention to it like that.
Yeah, I guess the one that stood out to me, obviously, was DK Metcalf as well. But Montez Sweat, goodness gracious. That, oh, man. It has come out here recently that he has a heart condition. So that's definitely an eye opener. But that's for those who don't know, Montez Sweat is a defensive end out of Mississippi State who had a stellar, and I mean stellar, NFL combine. He was he's considered to be a top 10 pick. He's 6'6", 260 pounds. This man ran a 4.41 and a 40-yard dash at 6'6", 260 pounds. Crazy. Good. So
yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, he's probably the one that stood out the most to me. But with him having that heart condition, now it kind of like it makes you take a little bit of a step back. Like, ooh, do we draft this guy? Do we not? I don't know, man. It's risky. But I think that I definitely think that this combine was pretty interesting. There were some guys that I felt helped their draft stock. One of those guys being a guy that I thought that I was just gonna be high on because he was a Buckeye, but apparently it's been that way across the board. Everybody's been extremely impressed with Paris Campbell from Ohio State, mostly because at Ohio State, he played the H-back, which is like our slot type of guy. He ran a lot of jet sweeps, a lot of short crossing routes. But in the combine, they said that they already knew he could do that well. But what stood out most to them was his down-the-field catching and route running. They said that all of his routes were crisp, and he was able to locate the ball extremely well on deep passes, and he didn't drop anything. So I think that he definitely helped his draft stock. I wouldn't be surprised to see Paris Campbell be a breakout star, or not necessarily a star, but be a breakout type of guy that a lot of people aren't expecting to be what he's going to be. I think he has great potential. Outside of that, yeah, that's pretty much it, though. Like you said, DK Metcalf was pretty much the one that jumped off the page to just about everybody. But what did you think of – did you watch any of Kyler Murray's pro day or see any clips from it or anything?
Nah.
I watched a portion of it, and I think he looked really good. Personally, to me, he didn't look any better than what I expected him to be. I think Kyler Murray is a – I think he's a very good talent. And as of right now, they've got him as the number one player going in the draft. The mock drafts have him number one, which has been a change because it had been Joey Bosa his pro day. Now they've got him number one on a lot of mock drafts. Do you think that he should go number one?
I don't think he's a number one talent, but I think it's more about fit and who's picking number one than anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say no. Because it's not about him being the best player in the draft. It's about him being the player that team wants.
I agree. Right now, as everybody knows, Arizona has that number one pick. And it's looking a lot like Arizona is going to take him. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, they've had their head coach change. Excuse me. What's the Hey, I'm yawning stuff. What's the coach's name is down and out? Just left y'all.
Cliff Kingsbury.
Kingsbury from Texas Tech. So, Kyler Murray's actually his type of guy. He's more of his type of quarterback than a Josh Rosen, which is a guy that they just drafted last year. And to me, it's extremely outlandish for a team to draft back-to-back quarterbacks in a draft, unless obviously something crazy happened to your quarterback, like an injury. But I think in this situation, it makes a little more sense because now that you've got a new head coach in Cliff Kingsbury, the quarterback, you obviously want him to succeed. So you want him to be comfortable. You want him to have the personnel that he needs to succeed. And
he said that's his dream.
Yeah, and Kyler Murray is the guy. When you have an opportunity to get him, I don't see why not. So I'm not against them taking him number one. But like you said, Kyler Murray to me is not a number one overall pick talent. But we'll see how that plays out. That's not necessarily to say that he won't be good. That's just to say that we don't see him as being number one overall type
Bosa
of guy.
Bosa is the number one overall pick.
Agreed. I agree 100%. And his combine looked good as well. A lot of people were anxious to see how he would look coming back off of that injury, the season in the injury they had Ohio State. But he didn't take a step back at all. He looks phenomenal. So whoever does get him, I think right now, the mock draft has him going at number two, I want to say. Let me look at it just to be sure. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm a little iffy because it's risky to me that you take a guy like Kyler Murray number one. Like, I feel like, yeah, the upside is there, but you also run the risk of him being the guy that everybody's expecting him to be, which is not a number one talent. So I don't know. Yeah, right now they have Nick Bosa number two to the 49ers, which I think will be huge for him because they just signed Dee Ford as well, I believe. Yeah, they just signed Dee Ford as well, which is huge for them. So you can see that they're trying to go in a defensive direction, and adding Joey Bosa would only help strengthen the defense. Right now they got Quinnen Williams, which is the D lineman that we talked about from Alabama who ran the crazy 4-4 as well. The D tackle, they got him going to the Jets. Right now, which is as crazy as it sounds, they have the Raiders drafting Dwayne Haskins at number four now. So that shakes things up a bit because they had Dwayne Haskins slip in the seventh going to the Giants. But if he's taken at four, now the Giants, now you really got some questions to answer. If you can't get your guy quarterback that you've been looking at, that everybody's been expecting you to go toward and turn your reins over to, now the question becomes, was Odell's trade really worth it? Because now you're in a very peculiar situation. So, I don't know. Like I said, right now they got Dwayne Haskins going fourth, which I think could be great if he does go there. Because now they got the opportunity of seeing if Derek Carr is really their guy. And if not, we can turn the reins over to another guy within the next year or so without even having to draft somebody. We got him right now. Giants are a sixth pick. They got Christian Wilkins going there, D lineman from Clemson, which will be a huge pickup for them since they just lost Olivier Vernon to trade, which to me was stupid. But I'm all for it. Let's make this division a lot easier for the Cowboys. But yeah, one more thing I want to touch on before we get out of here is DeSean Jackson went back to Philly. Big pickup or not?
Yeah, that's somebody that can stretch the field. He's still a top three deep threat in the game.
I agree 100%. Also along with that, he helps out a guy like Carson Wentz, because if we're being honest, Carson Wentz hasn't had any standout wide receivers since he's been there. And now that you no longer have Nick Foles behind you, believe it or not, there's probably more pressure on you now than there's ever been, because now we're expecting you to really be that guy. Like, we can't just turn the reins over to a guy like Nick Foles. Now you have to be our guy, and you have to lead us to where we have to go. And you don't really have much of an excuse. But I think DeSean Jackson definitely adds an extra dynamic to that team. Also brings him back to where I feel like he will retire. I think he's going to retire at Eagle. So not to say that that'll be within the next year or so, but I don't see him being in the NFL for more than maybe 3 more years. I'll give him 2 or 3 more years. But I think that that's a huge pickup for Philly. As bad as I don't want to say it, it's a big. That helps them out a lot. Now they got him, Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Aguilar. They're strengthening their wide receiver core, which, like I said, that's exactly what they're going to need right now, having a guy like Carson Wentz be the dominant guy without Nick Foles being there. Nick Foles is now in Jacksonville, which they have just recently released Blake Bortles, which isn't really surprising to me. It's kind of funny, but it's not necessarily surprising. I figured they might have kept him just to have him as insurance for a backup.
A backup or something. They was like, nah.
Yeah. I felt like it was funny. Like, damn. Like, I think that it would have been wise for them to keep him as a backup, just because in the NFL we've seen how valuable backup quarterbacks can be.
They said he ain't worthy.
Apparently so. Like, it's crazy, but he'll go somewhere. What else? There's one more thing I wanted to touch on. Ryan Fitzpatrick just went to the Dolphins after the Dolphins traded Ryan Tannehill. So it's looking like Ryan Fitzpatrick will now be a starting quarterback again. Don't really know what's going on in Miami. I don't know at all. I don't know what they're looking forward to with, as far as their future is concerned, but Ryan Fitzpatrick definitely isn't it. But, hey, whatever they decide to do is on them. But, yeah, man, that pretty much wraps up our episode. Was there anything else you wanted to say before we got out of here?
Yes. Join the Bracket Challenge.
Yes, we do have a Pick and Roll Podcast Bracket Challenge. You can find it on our Facebook. Link has been posted. We will continue to share it leading up into the opening games. But, yeah, join it. The more people, the better. We want to definitely make sure that we have some fun. And I mean, above anything, you'll have bragging rights in. Matter of fact, let's do it this way. It just hit me. This just hit me. Sam, and you will talk about it a little later, but I want to put this bug in your ear. Let's say, how about whoever wins the tournament challenge, if it's not one of us, then they automatically get to come on one of our episodes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, I'm down with that. So, go ahead and join. We've had a lot of people reach out to us asking us to be on the show. So now this is your opportunity to show us your expertise. And we'll also even take it a step further and let you pick some topics too. So, yeah, join the bracket challenge, the tournament challenge. Like I said, you only got a few more days because you know that it'll start, this weekend. So, yeah, make sure you get it in and submit your brackets and your winners. But yeah, man, that's pretty much it. Was that all that you want to add?
Yeah, that's it. That's all I had to say. All
right, man. Signing out. It's your boy Ish.
And it's your boy Sam, man. We appreciate
it. Y'all.